Welcome to Yolitix, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
All right. Hey again, everybody. Brand new week here on Yolitix. Thanks for being with us. Whiteley, what are you having today?
You're ready to get right to it, aren't you, man? What, do you got a date today?
I am.
What's going on?
No, I'm actually trying to hurry up and announce what we're drinking because I don't want to forget how to pronounce this. And I just looked it up.
Well, go ahead. You lead us off, though. What are you drinking, man?
Okay, so you stepped away to go grab a beer. I already had mine here because I like to come to the podcast prepared for what we're going to do. And I am having, this is from the Martin House Brewing Company in Fort Worth, Texas. And it's called a Blood Orange Imperial Salty Lady. And it's listed as a fruited imperial gosa.
What's up?
G-O-S-E. I had to look that up. I did not know. I would have never guessed gosa.
Are you sure that's how you pronounce it?
Gosa. Gosa. Like, it's like Rosa. Gosa. And I know that you made some comments about this beer, a second ago.
I haven't had it before, but I'm.
What did you call it again? Are you able to say what I called it?
Oh,
well, there were some.
Oh yeah. Well, when you're lady fruit beers.
Well, the funny thing is you say that this is 9.2% alcohol by volume.
Be a good podcast.
This is not a kidding around beer. What are you having?
I'm having the Great Hall Hefeweizen from Pegasus City Brewery.
From
Big D, and the Great Hall is for the Hall of State at Fair Park in Dallas, Texas. And
I know that because I picked that beer that you're drinking.
You're going to last me for a while here. I won't have to go shopping.
I know.
Thank you for this.
And by the way, this is, sour. Mm. It tastes like, what are those candies?
Sour Patch Kids?
It doesn't taste like those, but it tastes like the sour from those. Like that has been steeping in the beer.
Wow.
In other words, I really like this.
Yeah, good luck with that one, man. Good luck with that, all right? Let's get into our topic today. We're talking about what is the largest and most competitive statewide race that's coming up on March 1st. And it's hard to believe, but here we are, approaching mid-February. Early voting starts on Monday, a week from, the 14th is when it starts. February the 14th.
On Valentine's Day.
Coming up on Valentine's Day here.
So, and hopefully you're registered already because that deadline has now passed in the primary.
I know we're supposed to speed it up on this because we have a lot to get to, but do you vote in the primary?
I usually do.
Do you really?
I haven't always, but I usually try to now. Yeah. Because, so much of the decision is made then, And like you said, this is, and it's funny almost to hear you say it when you said that this is, the largest it's got a big field for this office that we're talking about. There's a big field running because I think that attorney general is one of those slots that a lot of voters just really are not paying that much attention to. People go in, they want to, governor, lieutenant governor, stuff like that. Attorney General's office, that just seems less sexy, and I think a lot of people just sort of who's running in that again? I kind of recognize this name.
And what does the AG do as well, too? So, for people who aren't familiar with it, the Attorney General is essentially the state's top cop, the top attorney in the state that will sue on behalf of Texas and will defend Texas in the event Texas gets sued, too. The current Attorney General is a Republican. His name is Ken Paxton. I presume you may have heard of him. He's been in for two terms. He is a loyal Trump supporter. His name has been in the headlines a lot for reasons which we will discuss in just a moment here. But some of the reasons that his name has been in the headlines has also drawn him three Republican challengers. And that's a big deal because most incumbents, especially someone running for their third term, usually doesn't get a challenger because the party's like, hey, we got a good one here that's already run a couple times or two or three times and won. Let's no one challenge this person. They usually have a big organization. They usually have a lot of money. Well, in this case, in Ken Paxton's case, in the Republican race for the Attorney General, there are three candidates running against him. Ken Paxton is the two-term incumbent going for the third there. George P. Bush is the outgoing land commissioner for the state of Texas. He is giving up that seat to run for Attorney General. It's a promotion if he would win that. Louis Gohmert is a congressman from East Texas. We'll hear from him in just a moment. And he is leaving Congress after 17 or 18 years to run for this seat, giving up some, you know, two big seats here. And Ava Guzman, she is a former state Supreme Court justice, a conservative as well, like the other two. And she walked away last year from the state Supreme Court in order to run for this. People are giving up their offices, what are likely, you know, offices they could probably stay in for maybe as long as they want. In order to,
I kind of think that's interesting. I kind of think that's interesting just as an observer and, you know, also over the years as a voter, because, you know, I think voters sometimes are turned off by someone who's sort of hedging, you know, and like, I'm going to kind of keep one foot in this seat over here while I reach to see if I can get that seat over there. Right. And they might do it in an off year when they, you know, still hold their seat. It is interesting to see people put skin in the game and go, you know what, I'm going to possibly lose everything that I've built up career wise in politics to go after this. That's how much this matters to me. So I think that that adds an interesting dynamic. And I think it also might possibly be making those candidates hungrier and maybe a little bit more aggressive in their campaigning. And it seems like we're sort of hearing some of that in the rhetoric already.
And we are going to hear from three of the four candidates for this race: Bush, Gohmert, and Guzman. Ken Paxton did not agree to join us for these interviews as well, too. We talked to them a couple days ago, but on this podcast, we are going to have someone kind of give us some Republican insight on who might win this race. The race appears to be tightening because no one is at 50% or above in polling. So joining us right now is Connie Burton. She is a former state senator from Tarrant County. She's also the founder and CEO of the Texan online news site, which you can find at thetexan.news. Connie, how are you?
Good. Thank you. I'm doing very well.
You survived the snowstorm, I presume.
I did. I always survive those kind of things by just staying inside and, and you know, not going out. I'm a warm weather person.
Rub it in. Yeah. We have those kinds of jobs where you still have to go in. And at least the roads were empty.
That's it. There you go. There's a bright side to everything, right?
I'm so much of a warm weather person. I moved to Texas for that reason.
Really?
Here we are. I moved to Houston a while back, but anyways.
I'm freezing
up here. Yeah, I was in St. Louis for a while, and my first day in St. Louis was minus 13 degrees.
Jeez. And I said, no way to live.
Yeah, so what am I doing here? And a buddy of mine just gotten a job in Houston at the time, so like days after I started in St. Louis back in the mid to late 90s, I called him. I said, listen, if something opens down there, let me know. I drove from St. Louis to Houston for my job interview. It wasn't a formal one. They didn't fly me in. I wanted to get out that badly. I drove to Houston.
So you
were calling in your first week on the job?
Within days, man. I was ready to go. But that's another episode. Let's talk about the issue at hand here, the Republican race for Texas Attorney General. We saw two polls out recently. I'm sure you saw them too, Connie. One is from the University of Houston, the Hobby School of Public Affairs down there, and then the others from the Dallas Morning News and UT Tyler. Both of them show that Ken Paxton polls around the mid-40s or so. And just a reminder to our listeners, you have to get at least 50% plus one in order to avoid a runoff and move on to the November general election. So to start out with here, do you expect that Paxton is going to go into a runoff with his three challengers?
I suspect that he is. You don't get three Republican challengers who are all, by the way, very high profile Republican challengers to a sitting Republican office holder for no reason. They smell, if I might say, blood in the water. And that's why he's got these three high profile challengers. I suspect that he will be under 50% for the first primary election, and it'll go into a runoff. That's my feeling about the race right now.
And that's never a good place to be if you are an incumbent coming in. And it's also something that's going to cost you. I mean, we're not used to seeing this, especially in Republican primaries here in Texas, where you have an incumbent, but people might already be starting to get sick of political ads. We've been seeing a lot of those.
Yeah. People do get very sick of political ads. It's kind of interesting. They actually can kind of play against you at times, mailers, TV ads. You know, I see people anecdotally, I don't know how much it really sways an election, but anecdotally, you know, people say, if I get one more mailer from them, I'm not voting for them. You know, so I can imagine that it's going to be pretty heated with TV and mailers and people knocking on doors with this race particularly.
But they're making him spend some money here, you know, even if he does get through this primary and even if he does get through a potential runoff, he's having to spend a lot of money here before he ever gets to a general.
Absolutely. And of course, that's a big part of what these primary challengers are talking about. It's like, you know, he is going to have a hard time in the general election because of what they, you know, are the issues that they're claiming against him. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that is their fear. They want somebody without this quote unquote baggage, so to speak, that can, you know, get the money needed to fight the Democrat opponent in the general election.
So, Connie, you said that you think that he might land in a runoff. Ken Paxton, the incumbent, might land in a runoff. We're going to let our listeners hear in just a moment from each of the three challengers. George P. Bush, the outgoing Texas Land Commissioner, Congressman Louis Gohmert, who is retiring from Congress, been there since 2005, and then, of course, the former Texas Supreme Court Justice Eva Guzman. We'll hear from them in just a moment, but I'll point out to our listeners that we did invite Ken Paxton on the program. He and his campaign declined to appear. He hasn't been showing up to events and forums with his challengers either. That's a common campaign tactic.
Yes.
When someone doesn't want to appear with their challengers to, you know, to give them any credibility. But you said you think it's going to a runoff. Who do you think Paxton might face in a runoff?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the big question, right? And it's interesting. I enjoyed watching each of those interviews because they've all got a different perspective, obviously, for that. As Congressman Gohmert said, you know, I'm the one because Ken Paxton is attacking me in his home area of East Texas, and I guess possibly throughout Texas. I'm not really sure on that, but I know that he's targeting Gohmert. So, of course, Gohmert is saying, I'm the one that's going to get him in a runoff. Now, you know, some polls are showing Bush, George P. To be the net, you know, the one that he's going to go in a runoff with. But of course, polls are very, as you know, we all get very frustrated with polls because you got to read all the, you know, the way the questions were formed. Who are they asking? You know, I think if you go more to specifically, yes, I am a Republican primary voter, Gohmert goes ahead, right? So it's all, and these are the games that, you know, the candidates have to play, you know, who is going to be at the polls? Who are they? We don't know that. And that's why polling tends to be sometimes good, sometimes bad, because at the end of the day, it's who can get their voters out to the polls to vote. So, you know, that's where it all lies. Is George P. Bush going to get more of his voters out? Is Gohmert, is Guzman, you know, she's doing, you know, what she was saying during her interview is they're doing a lot of, you know, at the door type campaigning. You know, will she get more of her voters out? That's the big question right now. So I can't tell you who I think Ken Paxton will have in the runoff, but I do believe it will be one of the three. That's not stepping out so far, is it?
That's a great prognostication there.
Good prediction.
I like how
there.
You hedge.
I'm playing Powerball tonight, Connie.
Y'all need to have me more on more often.
Well, let's do this. Let's go ahead and dive into these interviews here. We have three of them, Bush, Gohmert, and Guzman, as we mentioned a moment ago. To be fair, we're going alphabetically here. George P. Bush is first up with that. Let's listen. You have the second most amount of cash on hand right now. You are second in some of the polls behind the incumbent, Ken Paxton. But Paxton remains the leader far ahead of you, despite his legal troubles. What do you think that says about the Republican primary voter?
Well, Jason, first of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to visit with your viewers to talk about the top cop position in our state. And the grassroots reception has been overwhelming. If you look at our endorsements in the law enforcement community, whether it's on our southern border, the National Border Patrol Union, or the over 40 constables and sheriffs that have joined this campaign, I think it's building to be a successful race. Look, we've said all along, Jason, this would be a runoff between me and Ken. And if you look at the history of Texas politics, which I know you are a student of, when a statewide incumbent gets forced into a runoff, it's usually a bad sign that a majority of Republicans of his own party right now want to change. And so in a runoff, I'm ready to be that voice to clean up corruption, not only in the attorney general's office, but in county and local government. That's the role of what the AG needs to take on, is to ensure integrity and honesty in our process.
But it's a four-way race. How confident are you that this will be a this will end in a runoff on March 1st?
You know, this the formula is coming together to show that this will be a runoff. Whether it's the endorsements, whether it's the money raising, but more importantly, it's just the support that we're getting in the grassroots. You know, we're in the middle of our Texas First tour, hitting over 50 locations throughout the state of Texas in the last 6 weeks. It's really, Jason, our get out the vote effort. We have 600 volunteers knocking on over 50,000 doors and 25,000 calls, largely driven by young Texans. That's what's really inspiring about this campaign, is kind of the next generation of Texans having their voice heard.
But considering your organization and the get out the vote effort that your campaign is clearly making on this, why do you think the polls still show the incumbent so far ahead?
Well, we like the trajectory that we're on. Earlier on, you know, whether it's Dallas Morning News or other polling sources out there, they show that we are gaining ground. And they also show, Jason, that only one of five Republicans know that their top attorney is facing three felony counts and is under FBI investigation. So my message is very simple. You need to fire him because he's under a cloud of suspicion, but you need to hire me because I bring specific ideas on securing border, backing law enforcement, and restoring integrity to the top cop position.
Commissioner Bush, you've talked about the border several times. You on your website, you talk about wanting to work with the governor to deploy more National Guard troops, toughen criminal penalties on drug smugglers and human traffickers, and finish President Trump's wall. None of that, though, is the responsibility of the attorney general.
Well, as land commissioner, I made it early on in my process in the Biden administration to start building the Texas wall. And so that's why I worked with the Texas legislature. And I'm proud to report, Jason, that we'll finish on state acreage about 8 miles of wall in a highly trafficked area where 200 migrants come across. As attorney general, I think you can use the platform to advocate in the halls of power in our legislature to enhance criminal sentencing for human traffickers and drug smugglers. We are not getting serious enough about this problem when we see that fentanyl now is the cause of one of the largest sources of death in our nation, with over 100,000 overdoses of a toxic cocktail. But as AG specifically, I'm the only candidate in this race to propose a mobile prosecution unit to deploy all available legal resources, whether they're lawyers, paralegals, to work with ranchers and farmers, to start arresting under state criminal trespassing laws, because our county jails, our DAs and our sheriffs in border areas of Texas are totally overwhelmed.
I want to ask you about your opponents here, since this is a really highly watched race and there are four candidates in the race here too. Ken Paxton is going after Louie Gohmert with negative attack ads. Ava Guzman, the former Supreme Court justice, is attacking you, telling us in an interview, among other things, questioning your experience and your judgment and saying you haven't been in a courtroom for decades. Would you like to respond to that?
Sure. I've not only been a private attorney, but also an attorney as land commissioner. I brought suits on behalf of the state of Texas and the school children, which are my beneficiary, and really the taxpayers' beneficiary, whether it's defending the banks of the Red River or taking on radical environmentalist plaintiffs' attorneys under the Endangered Species Act. So a lot of people talk about suing the federal government, but I actually have as land commissioner. I've defended the oil and gas industry, and I've actually won in the courtroom.
Here's what's interesting to me. I completely understand this, but to point it out to our viewers here, everyone who's running in a primary with an R next to their name is talking about the border. It sells to Republican primary voters. What cracked me up, before I get back to Bush, what cracks me up is that Glenn Hagar, the comptroller, is talking about securing the border. He has campaign ads securing it. I'm like, really? Come on. Come on now. But listening to that, he likes his trajectory. Bush does there. He says they have a huge get out the vote effort, knocking on lots of doors. He seems like that his campaign really has one of those old school organizations that might be, you know, doing what so many have done in the past to win. How likely is it that he makes it, do you think, Connie?
I thought what I really thought was so interesting about that whole interview is that he said one in five Republicans mm-hmm. know that Ken Paxton is facing these three felony counts and he's under FBI investigation. Now, are those Republicans at large? Are those primary? Is that one in the five, the primary Republican voter? You know, the one person in those five that's going to vote in the primary. And if they know about it, that's the person that's likely going to be voting for the other candidate because they understand, as, you know, both Guzman and Gohmert are talking about, how that could be a weakness in the general election, right? So it's, I thought that was a very interesting statistic, and I frankly see that to be completely true, because there's you know, there's a lot of things that a lot of us who are very steeped in politics know. And then there's a lot of things that people that are just living their everyday lives and just, you know, kind of hearing things here and there that don't know. And that's no fault of theirs. I don't like that we live in a day and age that they have to know so much about all these politicians, you know, because it's hard when you're just trying to live your life. You have a job, you have a family, you know, those kinds of things. And of course, if I may just interject, it's always why I've been for limited government, because the more government gets into things, the harder it is for people to know, you know, all the things that they need to go to know. So that was a little of my own comment there. But you know, that's, it's true. It makes it very hard when there's so much that each politician does these days for the average person to know all the things about every candidate that they need to know. So I thought that was a very interesting statistic. I totally believe it. And again, that gets, okay, well, all five of those particular Republicans be voting in the primary? You know, if they don't know, you know, if those four out of five that don't know what Ken Paxton is facing, then that could obviously push, you know, things toward Ken Paxton. It'll you know, again, as I was mentioning earlier, it'll depend on how much of all three of these candidates get the word out about what Ken Paxton is facing.
I was just going to say, he's saying it's one out of five right now. You've got to squirm a little bit here if you're Ken Paxton wondering, well, you know, if I've got three opponents against me, Jason's correct. They're all talking about the border, but they are all also talking about these charges against him, this investigation into him. Do they educate another person out of five or a third person out of five? Where is that threshold? That's got to be making Ken Paxton sweat a little bit here.
I would think so. And I think that's what Bush is speaking to, the trajectory here, right? I mean, there's three opponents, again, high profile opponents that are all talking about the same things about Ken Paxton. So that's got to do a lot of educating to a lot of voters in Texas, and certainly primary voters. That's what they're all targeting here. So, you know, I'm guessing that this one in five is just general Republicans. I'm guessing that there's more primary voters that know about these allegations, but I don't have any statistics to prove that.
And for people who aren't as steeped in politics as we might be here on Yolitics, George P. Bush is the only Bush that is a loyal supporter of Donald Trump and has been for a long time.
Right.
Our next interview is with Louie Gohmert. Louie Gohmert is the congressman from East Texas. He represents District 1 over there, Tyler and Texarkana, the northeast quadrant of Texas. Gohmert, for those who haven't seen or may not watch, you know, Fox News and places like that, he is a fierce supporter of Donald Trump, always has been. He and Ken Paxton were friends. They might still be, I don't know, with this race going on, but they were friends up until this point, and they are probably most alike ideologically. Gohmert is a late add to the race. He decided to get in at the last minute, and he said the reason he decided to get in is because he thought that the ethical problems for Ken Paxton were just too big to overcome. So here's our interview with Louie Gohmert.
I want to ask you first about the incumbent Ken Paxton going on the attack against you here. What are your internal polls showing about whether you would make a runoff?
Well, actually, we haven't done a poll since I very first got in, but I know Paxton's got nine times more money than I do, so he's running polling constantly. And for him to go on the attack against only one of the three people that is running against him tells you his polling that's going on constantly tells him he is going to be in a runoff with me, and he's trying to avoid that.
In Conroe the other day, Congressman, Donald Trump recognized you as a friend who has been with him since day one. You are a longtime loyal supporter of the former president, but he again endorsed your opponent, Ken Paxton. Why do you think Trump is backing Paxton over you?
Trump called me after I announced and said, hey, I was told you were definitely not running. And he reiterated that when we talked last week, and he had called. And anyway, he'd encouraged me to come to Conroe. And so I did. But we're still friends. But one of the things we love about him is he's stubborn. He's never pulled back an endorsement, and I didn't figure he would in this situation. But his way of handling that was to give us both a great shout out.
Everyone knows this. You know it. You're practically walking away from a guaranteed seat in Congress. What happens if you don't make the runoff on March 1st? What happens to Louie Gohmert?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I never take anything for granted, but yeah, usually won with around 3/4 of the vote. But that's a big difference between me and Paxton. Paxton, well, in my case, I'm willing to risk any political future I have to try to save Texas, because without Texas, no Republican can win the White House. I want to save Texas so we can save our country, whereas Paxton is willing to risk the state and country to save his own skin.
Congressman, there are a number of issues in this race. We have 3 or 4 minutes left here. I want to ask you about a couple of them. The first, your record in Congress has become an issue in this race by some of your opponents. Ken Paxton and Eva Guzman both pointing out that you have missed more than 800 votes since being elected initially back in 2005. What do you tell Republican primary voters about that?
Well, look, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of votes. And one of them is a approval of the journal, which is the transcript from the previous day. As a judge, I never approved a transcript unless I read it. So that accounts for many of the votes, and many of the votes too, whether it's quorum call or some votes, on suspensions are done just so they get us to the floor and can whip up on us and try to get us to vote for something they don't want. When those are the votes, I'm not in a hurry to get there. I did miss one vote that was inconsequential. It wouldn't have mattered, and I put that on the record. My cousin had died. I was his legal representative. I needed to get back. It was totally unexpected. But he made an issue of missing that, even though it didn't make any difference in the scheme of things. But he also has put out stuff saying I'm not conservative. And that just shows how desperate he is and what a liar he is. Because if you look at all the different entities, conservative entities, including Conservative Review, that rate people, they analyze the bill. They don't cherry pick and say there was something good in this, but then fail to put how bad the other stuff was in it. You have to weigh all those things when you vote. He cherry picks. He's lying. And it just shows how desperate it is. All people have to do is look at the conservative entities that rate members of Congress, and they will know what the people of East Texas have known about 3/4 of them each election, that I stand for what I say I will, and no liar like Ken Pax. Well, what do you expect? He's under indictment from securities fraud. He's about to get indicted after the primary in all likelihood for corruption. So adding lies to him, not just the lies he told in his private life, but to voters, he's desperate. And some of the people that work for him had thought that perhaps he wants to win the primary so that when he gets indicted, he can work a deal with the feds and say, look, I won't campaign. I'll let the Democrat win if you just won't recommend jail time for me. He's putting Texas at risk.
Well, them's fighting words right there, Connie. So going into this, Whiteley said, you know, these two guys are friends, or at least they used to be. I'm going to fall in the used to be camp there. You've been through politics. You've been through the rough and tumble of this. We've seen, odd bedfellows, after strong words and so forth. But That got really personal.
Yeah, I was kind of doing what you just did. Woo! When I was watching that, and what was in my mind so enjoyable is it was just such a level, you know, it was just kind of level and just saying what he was saying, but it was quite personal. Which, you know, because that was what I was going to say on this particular one. What was most interesting to me was the fact that he called him a liar. Three, maybe four times. I know at least three times. And then brought up lying in his private life, which I thought was very interesting and wondered if that was going to come up during this. And
well,
I
explain that, Connie. Explain that for people who might not know what's going on. Well,
tell us all about that, Connie.
Yes, yes. So there is infidelity accusations, which has been corroborated. Let me explain a little bit more. Infidelity accusations against Ken Paxton as he was a sitting attorney general, which with a woman who did work in the Senate. And this has been corroborated by two people, at least in media accounts, and who have inside knowledge and a personal relationship with Ken Paxton. Now, again, those of us who are in steeped in politics know about this. I don't know how many voters out there are aware of this, but clearly this is what Congressman Gohmert was alluding to when he said he lies in his private life. Obviously, the affair was while he was married, so I'm certain that's what Congressman Gohmert was referring to in terms of lying. So this on top of, obviously, this is where Gohmert is going. He's saying he's a liar. You know, he's got what did he say specifically? Under indictment for security fraud.
Yeah, and then he
get indicted for corruption. You know, that's where he was calling him a liar. Obviously, that involves that kind of activity. And we're going, what's going with this?
And Connie, isn't he sort of bringing it home for a voter who might not be connecting the dots here? Because, I mean, already Ken Paxton has won re-election while he was already indicted for the investment scheme allegations.
Right.
So he's already won re-election before.
That's correct.
Maybe a voter's not connecting dots here, but Gohmert is specifically speaking to the Republican primary voter out there and saying, hey, maybe you haven't read a lot about these charges. Maybe you don't care a lot about these charges. But what's going to happen, he's making the assumption here, that what's going to happen is that this guy is going to have so much baggage, it's going to weigh him down. It's going to force Republicans to start to lose this state and start to lose power nationally. He's trying to connect those dots for voters to say, maybe you didn't care about this before, you should care about this.
Absolutely. That's exactly spot on what he's doing. And something that I did not realize, and if I may, I am owner and CEO of the Texan News, which is a statewide political news organization. And on that, we have what's called the War Room. And we have each of the statewide campaigns on this site or news page, I guess I should say. I'm sorry, I'm not.
This is your organization, Connie. Come on, it's yours.
I got off there for a minute. The War Room is its own entity within the Texan News, if I may say it better there. And so within that, it kind of gives you some a little bit of polling, a little bit of an introduction to the candidates and what's going on. Something that I didn't realize was that Ken Paxton, while you are correct, he won the previous election. He only won it with like 50.6% in the general election. And I was very surprised. I did not realize it was that close. In a general election that I would say was a no-name candidate against him. Now, in Paxton's defense, that was a very different general election than what this general election will be. And as we all know, there's so many different things that come into play. At that time, Trump was the sitting president. Not only were there many Republicans who despised Trump, but there were, you know, the Democrats were hot, red hot crazy against Trump, right? So there was a lot, and Beto was on the election against Ted Cruz.
Right.
You know, we're going into a very different general election than that one, but. I would venture to say that, you know, that will be used as well against Paxton, that, yes, he won, but it was only 50.6% of the vote. And, you know, will he be able to handle the general election? That's what I'm thinking that these candidates, primary candidates, are going to be saying more and more throughout this primary season.
Yeah, and that's why the Republicans smell blood in the water. It's why Democrats are running three candidates as well.
That's right.
Just to point out to our listeners, even though Ken Paxton is not on our program here, he has denied the allegations of wrongdoing with the felony securities fraud charge back from 2015. He also denies the corruption allegations, and which has led to the FBI investigation that his seven top former lieutenants have alleged against him. I have not heard if he has said anything about the personal allegations against him, Connie. Has he?
I have not heard that. I have not No.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. Let's get to our last guest on here. It's Ava Guzman. She is a former Texas Supreme Court justice. She is from Houston. You may have seen her ads. She has a lot of those running right now on radio and TV. Here's what Justice Guzman told us.
I want to ask you about you raising the most amount of money in the last reporting period, even outraising the incumbent, Ken Paxton. But you poll in fourth place. Why aren't Republican voters, primary voters, connecting with you?
Those polls don't reflect what I'm seeing on the campaign trail, and they don't reflect the independence of Texas voters. And thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to talk about the most important election in the state of Texas, the Attorney General's office. Texas is hiring a lawyer. Texans should hire the lawyer with the most experience, the one with the proven track record for standing up for conservative values, and the one that will bring integrity to the job on the day one.
Well, as far as experience and ideology, that's what you're really touting, of course, but it seems that the voters have maybe moved beyond that. It seems to be who can out-Trump Trump.
Voters want someone that can win in the courtroom. I'm the only candidate running that has 22 years experience in the judiciary. And that means I know how to file winning lawsuits. Ken Paxton has failed to deliver results. He's failed to respect the office. He's lost the trust of the people of Texas. I'm a former judge, married to a police officer, the daughter of legal immigrants, a mom, and a proud Texan. You know what Texans really want? Somebody who'll fight against the Biden administration. That's me, ready on day one.
Justice Guzman, you have talked about how Ken Paxton's lawsuits have failed in court and how they have fared as well, especially over the Affordable Care Act, the Keystone Pipeline as well, too. Would you have even filed in those cases, or would your arguments have been different, or what?
I would have filed winning arguments. Ken Paxton doesn't know the law. He doesn't know how to follow the law, and that's why he's losing in the courtroom. He also lost seven of his hand-chosen staff. Let's just think about that. Break that down. You go out and hire seven conservative, smart attorneys. You handpick them. You bring them in your office. They're doing their job. They catch you violating the law. They catch you committing bribery and fraud, so they say, and abuse of office, and they go to the FBI. Right now, as we sit here today, the Attorney General's office is missing the top-notch lawyers that help Texans win in court. I'll bring them back. I'll bring them back on day one. And I know how to win in court. Ken Paxton, for whatever good he's done, his personal indictments, pending indictments, FBI investigations are a distraction to the important work of the people of Texas. We can thank him for what he's done and send him on his way. And we should, as a Texan, absolutely, I believe we can do better.
Justice Guzman, you have, what, $2 million cash on hand. How do you intend to spend that money over the next 4 weeks in hopes of pushing Ken Paxton to a runoff?
If you look at the last reports, 60% of everything we raised has gone directly to voter contact. Contrast that with George P. Bush. No experience, no judgment. 9% of what he raised went to voter contact this last reporting period. I outraised them because Texans know they're ready for real leadership in the Attorney General's office. They're ready for someone with a proven track record. They're ready for a conservative, a fighter, someone who'll stand up to Joe Biden and who can do it on day one. And that's me.
And Justice Guzman, about 60 seconds left here. I do want to ask you, obviously the clock is ticking. The March 1st primary is closing in. What more do you want Republican primary voters and independents to know about you that they might not already?
You're hiring a lawyer. It's time to fire the failed, indicted Ken Paxton. It's time to reject the other two candidates who haven't seen a courtroom as a lawyer in decades. It's time to tell George P. No, we don't need your kind of leadership in the Attorney General's office when you haven't even had a law license for the last active law license for the last 10 years. I'm ready to work for Texas. Day one, I'll bring back, just by walking in the office, integrity. Day two, I'll restore the type of attorneys that Texas needs in that office. And on day three, I'll sue Joe Biden. You can count on me to do that.
All right. Ava Guzman there making her case of what she'd do in week one if she takes over where Ken Paxton is now. Connie, you know, listening to these three candidates, it sounds like your prediction was spot on that it could be any of them who enters into a runoff with Ken Paxton. All of them like their chances, or at least they say so. And each one of them has been able to demonstrate at least that they've got, you know, support that's growing in one area or another, whether it be money or polls or so forth. How much does Ken Paxton have to be concerned if, you know, once we do get to the point, if he does go to a runoff with someone, that the other two close ranks with that that third person, and maybe those voters shift to that person? Because it sounds like they, you know, they go after each other just a little bit here, but it's that typical sort of politics when they do, you know, the experience isn't there, the whatever's not there. But when they go after him, it is personal and there's some vitriol.
Right, exactly. And that's where Ken Paxton needs to be very concerned, because if he's under 50% and the other three, you know, are splitting that the rest of it after the primary when he's in a runoff. I mean, my guess is, and I have no knowledge of this, but my guess is those three are going to want the opponent to beat Ken Paxton, because they are all going after Ken Paxton for the very same reasons, as you just stated, right? I think all three of them believe that these are a problem for our sitting attorney general to have these kinds of allegations and accusations and, you know, against him, and that to win in the general, one of the other three needs to be on the general election ballot. So if that happens, And we've seen it. I think you stated it, Jason. It's one of the interviews. I mean, we know that famously that's how Ted Cruz beat David Dewhurst, right? It was get him to a runoff, and then, you know, though generally that's how an opponent from somebody from a high profile elected official can win. The opponent's supporters are generally more energized. It's an off time election. It's not, you know, the primary day or the general election. It's kind of, I mean, it's obviously its own date. And those people who are so in tune to that particular race in a runoff are generally the opponents of the sitting elected official, and that's how you beat them. So, and if you've got, you know, that many percentage that we're all voting for those opponents now together, voting for the one, that's where Attorney General Paxton has a real concern on his hands.
Yeah, just for people who aren't students of Texas politics, or might not have been around back in 2014 or 20. When did Ted Cruz win? 2012, I think.
2012.
It was 2012. Yeah, it's been that long ago. No one knew Ted Cruz.
No.
No one knew Ted Cruz. David Dewhurst, the lieutenant governor at the time, he was the popular candidate, the one favored to win the Republican primary and probably go on to the U.S. Senate.
But Ted Cruz at that time was, he would stand around. I remember his standing around forever waiting to go on live because he, you know, he was an unknown.
That's right.
But to your point there, Connie, you know, a lot of voters just don't show up for the runoffs. And mm-hmm. if an incumbent gets into a runoff, an incumbent could really be in danger here. That's quick true. Note on Guzman there. She has 1.3 million cash on hand. She doesn't have 2 million cash on hand. That's George P. Bush who has that. My mistake there. But she does have solid conservative credentials. She was handpicked by Greg Abbott, Connie. She did not mention the word Trump once in our interview. Is that why she's not connecting with voters, do you think? Is that why she's polling in fourth place at 7 or 8%?
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. Now, you know, she has been on statewide. I say that I haven't said my point yet. I don't think she has the name ID that Gohmert or George P. Bush have. That's what I was going to say. Now, she has been on a statewide ballot, you know, how many times now? So, you know, obviously garnered a lot of votes and beat Democrats both times. So she's got some. But how many people really know their Texas Supreme Court justices, right?
Wheeler, can you name them, Wheeler, right now? Go ahead. Name all 14, Wheeler.
Well, Connie was talking. You cut her off there. Let's let Connie finish.
I'm glad you asked him and not me. Right?
So, it is true. I mean, that's, you know, you get down that ballot. And I mean, I think a lot of people could name the U.S. Supreme Court justices.
Right.
But they might not be able to name even two or three Texas that's Supreme right. Court justices. And the fact of the matter is, that high court here in this state is making a lot of decisions that affect us here.
Yes. And of course, you know, you're going down the trail that I always say, people, stop focusing on federal level. We've got state level and local level that's, you know, has much more impact on your everyday lives. But you know, I couldn't tell you. I mean, I know the names, but I couldn't sit here and list off the names of everybody on the Texas Supreme Court either.
Well, I could, but I don't want to be that guy. Oh, I mean, no. do y'all want them in alphabetical? In alphabetical reverse.
No.
So, Connie, I want to know, you know, we want to reiterate here that, you know, the incumbent here, Ken Paxton, the attorney general here in Texas, was invited to be on this program. Yeah. He declined, decided not to be a part of this. So we're hearing from his three Republican opponents. And that's before, you know, he would ever even have to deal with, you know, if he gets to the general, a Democratic opponent. Connie, you've been a state senator. You've run campaigns. Is it the right decision for Ken Paxton? I mean, I know that he's got this baggage that his opponents are talking about here, but it's looking like this will go to a runoff. Is it the right decision to sit out?
Right. So you're right. I've run campaigns. I understand it's a strategy. I get it. Jason mentioned that earlier too. It's the prevailing wisdom. You don't, you know, legitimize your opponents. And who knows if I was in that situation, would I be doing it too? Who knows? But as a voter and as a primary voter and as somebody that, you know, hates the political shenanigans, I sure wish that he would be partake of these, of all the, not only your interviews, but also the debates and forums that are happening. I think people deserve it. And, you know, I always tell, I've moderated a few of the primary candidates in different parts of Texas during this primary season, and it's been very fun. And I tell every audience that I speak to that iron sharpens iron. And I love the primary process. You shouldn't act like you're above it. You shouldn't get angry that you have primary opponents. That's what our country's about. Everybody has the right to run. Everybody, voters have the right to hear your defense of what you have done and why you have done it. And it frustrates me as somebody who's very involved in politics, as I mentioned, you know, just as a voter, that these candidates do not partake of it. I think it shows a disregard for the average voter for you not to get in front of them and defend your record. And so It's probably the right strategy for him. I think it probably is. Should it be the strategy? No, not for the voters' sake. No, it should not be the strategy. And so I don't like it when they do that. And I will tell you, to go back to Dewhurst and Cruz, it really, really, really hurt Dewhurst when he did that. I mean, I think he finally in the end showed up for one of the debates, but of course Ted Cruz took advantage of it and made a big deal of it. And it kind of surprised me these days that more of these opponents to these sitting incumbents don't make a bigger deal of that. I'm very surprised by that because I think you could use that, against these incumbents.
Well, we'll see if history repeats itself there. Yeah,
that's a good point. Connie, before we let you go here, what other primary races are you going to be watching? Any other big ones? I know you'll be watching all of them, but this is the largest, most competitive race.
It is.
Which one out there do you think could be an upset for you?
The gubernatorial, obviously, I'm, watching very closely. I mean, again, it's you've got a former state senator and a former chair, the Republican Party. He was a congressman, I mean, these are not no-name people that are running against the governor. And I don't know where that will go, but that's, it's like, whoa, this has not happened before. Right. Mm-hmm. And obviously, just as I mentioned for this race, these high profile people see an opening there for them to run. I think the ag commissioner race is interesting. Very interesting. So I'm watching that. And then, of course, all the, House and Senate races, watching all of them. But as far as the statewide, those three are very intriguing to me, and I'll be watching very closely.
We'll check in with you after March 1st and see how these things go. Okay. Connie, thank you so much for the time, as always.
Thank you, Jason and Jason.
Thanks. We appreciate the insight.
You bet. We'll talk to you later.
I always like listening and hearing from Connie because she is a former grassroots activist who ran for state Senate after Wendy Davis lost her bid for governor back in 14 is when it was. These 14, races are going so fast here. The years are going so fast. But
that's because the campaign never stops anymore.
It never ends, man. The cycle is always going. But Connie always has good insight because she's still in touch with the grassroots. And that's why we like calling on her. Quick reminder before we guys let you go on this, early voting starts on Monday, February the 14th. I hope that if you're listening to this podcast, if you're interested in Texas politics, that you are registered to vote because that deadline is come and gone. It was January 31st. But make sure you get out and vote. It's always easier to vote during early voting, that 2-week period before the March 1st primary.
And turnout is always pathetic. So let's see if we can maybe get that up a little bit because, again, so much of the decision is made here in the very early going. Thanks, as always, for joining us this week, and we'll do it all again next week.